that sums it up. Just, you know, if you go by what the packaging says here, and this is what sold me on it, was the packaging. New batteries must be charged before use. Store batteries in charger when not used. So seeing that, I said, oh, must be a smart charger. Shuts off when it's fully charged, and I assumed you would keep it in the charger so the batteries would stay at their peak performance level, similar to like the Maha charger I have for the FT50. This is a second set of batteries. I have an initial set of these, which you gave me, that I keep in the Racing Electronics Alpha 2000 racing scanner. So I said to myself, well, why not have a second set to keep plugged in and fully charged? So when the first set goes down, I can switch over to the second set. But then here's the wording in the manual. Now I see this manual is written for three different models. Step 4. After fully charging, unplug the charger and remove batteries. And it says for P3 GPA, auto-off feature automatically shuts off the charger and red indicator light switches off to indicate charging is completed after 5 hours. For the P3S PA and the 4S PA, after the batteries have reached its full charging capacity, the auto-off feature will be activated. The batteries may be left in the charger during this process. However, the maximum battery life, it is recommended that the batteries will be removed once they are fully charged. So I'm going to have to see which model I have out of the three. But again, this is in the little instruction booklet that's folded up inside the package. I went by what was written on the box. So Dennis Vacco is still our Attorney General. I'd probably send this packaging to him. But somehow a little bit misleading. Just thought I'd pass that info on and thank you, Frank, for your additional information. At this time, I'll stand by for anyone with any other comments on this subject before we move on to Curtis and 2WWN.
Words a minute. Just one last comment.
Okay, Frank, I think you're doubled with somebody. Stand by one moment.
KC2BZC with an additional question on the batteries.
Okay, stand by, Joe. Let's pick up Frank and NQDRA.
Thank you, Ed. Sorry, Joe, he doubled. You know, the thing is, too, that you have to keep in mind that that type of charger is a fast charger, and it's also a timed charger, and it has, you know, it has no brain, that charger. It's just basically, plug me in, and I'm going to give you this current for 5 hours. I don't care if you're half charged, undercharged, overcharged, and batteries will get hot. It doesn't know any better. So it's one of those fast chargers, that it's a timed charger, 5 hours, that's it, good luck, Charlie, after that. Some of the other chargers out there have pulse charging and then reduce the charge to a trickle. In that case, you could keep it on charge and it would be ready for use. You know, it prevents the discharge of the batteries once they've reached their maximum capacity of charge. But, you know, the other thing too, Ed, is that you can, with the racing scanner, I don't know if you have the DC adapter or not, I think it comes with it, you can charge the batteries in the scanner, which is probably more an efficient way, it just takes longer. I think the output is something like 200 milliwatts, milliamps, or what the heck it is, milliamps, that's what it is. I never heard a World War talk before, so it's not milliwatts, it's milliamps. That's real QRP. But anyway, if you leave them in the radio and use that wall charger, the 200 thing there, about 18 hours of charge will give you a good saturated slow charge, and that's what they like. You know, they would prefer a slow charge for a longer period of time, which will not cause them to heat up either, and they will charge more deeply and work for you more efficiently. So, you know, 1100 milliamps definitely go at about 18 hours, and they should be pretty well up to full capacity. Back to you, Ed.
Into VRA, KC, to AYC. All right, Frank, thanks for that. And here I discovered something. the model of the charger, the BQ-2F, those P things I was referring to, let's go back, step four, after fully charging, unplug the charger and remove battery. And that clearly contradicts what the packaging says. Then where it says for P-3 GPA, auto off feature automatically shuts off the charger and red indicator light switches off to indicate charging is completed after 5 hours. And that's all it says. So one would assume that, refer to step four, remove the battery. Then there were these other two part numbers that went on to say the batteries may be left in the charger, blah, blah, blah. What I discovered, those are the models of the battery. Just pulled the battery out, small print on the battery. It's a P-3 GPA, size AA. So evidently, Panasonic makes three different types of batteries that can be charged by this charger. So clearly, a little misleading advertisement or something on the packaging or what, I don't know what else to say without being redundant. Alright, let's pick up KC2BZB.
2AYC, KC2BZB. Along the lines of batteries, the question I wanted to ask, and Frank, I'm sure you probably got an answer for this. What would you or anyone suggest for a larger power supply than AA batteries? Your handheld or what for something that draws more power, like maybe a handheld HT or bigger? In other words, there's pluses and minuses. Car batteries obviously are very big, but they have acid and they're a bit heavy to carry. So I just wanted to know what you or anyone else would suggest for a larger portable battery pack. Back to net control.
All right.
Okay, let's pick up N2VRA.
You know, you talk about portability, so you want something that's not going to be too heavy. But there's a lot of different ways you can go. You can go to the shack and get some battery holders and put together your own configuration. I would probably go with D batteries because they have a better capacity. You know, or you can go with the one of those little power pack things, the gel cells. You see those things advertised. You sell them at the ham fest sometimes, too. And, of course, the that battery thing, you know what that is, with the switches and the lights on the top there. I can't think of the name of it. Curtis probably knows what it is. Rather pricey, but that'll work. You got to look at it this way. I mean, are you camping out for the weekend in the middle of the boondocks, so are you going to need power for 2 or 3 days, or are you just going out for, you know, for a couple hours here and you can have nothing to plug into, so this will do the job. Or maybe you work in an event with the Aries or Aces or something, and you're out of the vehicle, so you need something for a few hours that's going to last. You know, again, portability is a factor. I used to use a, outside on my deck, I had a marine battery, because I don't have my boat anymore, but I took the, that's all I have left, and now that's gone. But I use a deep cycle marine battery, which worked very well. Had a lot of capacity.
BP. Okay, N2VRA, thanks for that info. Again, all units, no central, no unauthorized transmission. All right, Frank, thanks for that. Well, Joe won't admit it. I think Joe is going off the Y2K deep end. Joe?
KC2AYC, KC2BZB. No, and let me put it this way. If I'm worried about Y2K, the radios would be a very minor thing on the list of necessities. Food and water would be a lot higher. No, like I just said, I have a jail cell downstairs, and, on my handhelds, I'm killing the battery, and if you ever use them for a long period of time, you know, I do have a lot of NiCads, but they're all starting to age. And I'm just wondering if I'm better off, like, rather than replacing the gel cells or, you know, paying Radio Shack, whoever, for AA, if maybe I'm better off with, like, the, maybe one of the 7 amp hour gel cells or whatever. With Y2K, none of these things are going to last more than a week or so because you're not going to be able to recharge them anyway. So you're talking about solar power or, I don't know, maybe a bicycle generator? But no, these are the things. In fact, an Aries event is a good example. Like my handheld, and even the FT50, the batteries don't last that long. So that's the type of thing I was thinking of, something along that line. Just over a suggestion. Sorry to spoil it on your head, but no, this really has nothing to do with why you're saying. Back to
you. And to APG.
VRA additional. And to APG and into VRA recognized. Let's pick up.
Yeah, thanks, Ed. Batteries are one of my favorite topics. In my opinion, I think the gel cells are the way to go, especially if you can pick them up at a flea market for a few bucks, used, whatever. I think they give you your most bang for the buck. They're very forgiving. They have good capacity, all that other stuff. The drawback, of course, they're heavy, but nothing's perfect. Back to net.
Okay, thanks for your comments. Stick with us for a moment. Let me pick up Frank, but I got something that might be a little question you might be able to answer. But let me send it over to N2VRA for his comment.
Yeah, thank you, Ed. I just hope that that code I just heard isn't going to be on the 10. Wow. Anyway, sounds like somebody dragging a Martin Payne sticker across the picket fence. Anyway, you know, you can fit it too as a motorcycle battery with a trickle charger. You can get them at Kmart. They're always on sale. Or check out Pep Boys or something. That's a good alternative. You just get a coaxial plug and a piece of wire, and you're in business. And you could even make a little carry handle or some other nonsense that would go with it. They're very small, and they have good capacity, and should work out well. Or a snowmobile battery, something a little bigger. Go ahead and check them out. There's a lot of cute little batteries you can pick up that'll serve your purpose. Ed, back to you.
N2VRA, KC2AYC in the net. All right, something Curtis, N2WWM, and I picked up last year at the Zara, Bergen Amateur Radio Fest at Fairleigh Dickinson. This woman had put together a little kit. What you got was a little green carry-all bag that actually is a bag that housed one of the old-fashioned Oki Data cell phones. In fact, on the bag it says Oki phone. And inside the bag is a battery pack. It says Oki Telecom. And it's obvious by looking at the thing, it was a brand new battery. You know how it is with cell phones. Their technology is just as fast as the computers as far as, you know, what's in today is out tomorrow. So evidently they had a lot of these batteries. 12-volt, 2.3-amp-hour sealed lead-acid battery. I've also seen these batteries advertised in, like, MCM Electronics or All Electronics. You know, the clearance houses. Now, what happens is there's a little clip, which I've also seen these clips available, that clips right onto the battery, and it's got a cigarette lighter adapter on the end. So what you need is a cigarette lighter adapter for your HT, and this has the receptacle end on it. What the woman gave us to charge it, it all came with the kit for $10. The woman gave us to charge the thing was a wall wart, you know, a little wall wart transformer with a cigarette lighter plug on the end. Plug the cigarette lighter into the receptacle on the battery and plug this on the wall. This thing charges at a rate of 12 volts DC and 300 milliamps. I brought this question up to Dick on the Limar TechNet. Now, certainly, you know, I certainly hold Dick's opinion in high regard. So I'm not saying I contradict what Dick said at least, but I just wanted to point out, you know, what Dick had told me, that that's really not the proper way to charge a sealed lead acid battery. if I think of my automotive training, that makes sense. That they think really the proper way to do it is with a specialized charger that's going to charge at a different rate through the different stages of the cycle. But $10, I guess we weren't going to get that. So I don't know, I've only used this thing once or twice, but it's the perfect kind of thing for an Aries event, because you can sling it over your shoulder if need be, and it comes in this bag. So would anybody like to comment on that? Again, it's a 2.3 amp hour battery, sealed lead acid, and it came with a 300 milliamp wall wart charger.
PRA.
Hey, PG.
Dan 2 VRA and PG recognized school for Frank.
Yeah, thank you, Ed. If you recall, we were at the Great South Bay Ham Fest, the last one, and they had them for $7 over there. The guy had boxes and boxes of them, and they didn't come with a little green carrying case, but it was a small, well, it kind of looks like a, I don't know, the battery's the size of an HT, and it's got a receptacle or lighter plug wired into it, and it has the words non-spillable on the outside in little black letters. No mention as to what the capacity is, although I think the guy mentioned when he was selling them. That also came with a charger with the lighter plug on it, and the rate of charge listed on that, as I'm looking at, is 12 volts, 6 watts output. I've used it for about 7 hours already on a scanner, and it just works absolutely fine. And this was the kind of a scanner that has the light on all the time. You know, it was a mobile scanner. And it worked fine for 7 hours, had no problem. And that was for $7. You can't really beat that. It's a good price. And that vendor was at the Great South Bay. He could be at Limark, which is coming up also. Ed?
Okay, Frank, thanks for that info. And let's pick up Dave and 2APG.
Okay, that's very good. Sounds like the N2APG. It sounds like you got a pretty nice battery pack there. Something that I probably would pick up as well at the flea market. I'm no technical expert, and when it comes to the technical charging specifications and all that stuff, of course I would also defer to Dick. However, being a seat of the pants kind of battery guy, I have charged and used many gel cells over the last, 10 years or so. I always use a small wall wart to charge them. Usually it works fine. I've never had one blow up or burn the house down yet. The one that you have sounds, quite good. 300 milliamps or 200 milliamps should be quite sufficient. You could probably leave the thing on charge for, a day or two without any problem. What I would do is just seal the battery just to make sure it's not getting excessively warm. Again, seat of the pants type operation. But for $7, if you can pick up those gel cells, again, it sounds to me like an excellent value. To buy a NiCad battery with the same capacity, you'd probably spend $50, $60,
$70. AC2AYC in the net. Okay, Dave, appreciate your comments. And sounds like a good deal. If Joe, you might want to consider that the next Ham Fest we go to. If I see them, I'll point them out. But thanks, Dave. Appreciate that. Glad, in theory, I'm sure Dick was right. But, I guess, yeah, by the seat of the pants, maybe I won't get the life out of the thing that I would had I had the proper charger. But looking at the cost factor, for $7 to $10, get the whole kit and caboodle, and when the thing burns out, you go buy another one for $7 or $10 compared to God knows what the proper charger would cost.
One more comment, go ahead.
Sure, Dave.
Yeah, for those of you who will go to the flea market, the ham fest, whatever, and see some of these gel cells for sale, just as a rule of thumb, you know, of course, you can't tell whether they're good or they're bad, or, you know, they're old or they're new by looking at them. It's very difficult to judge them. But just when you pick up some of these batteries, especially, you know, the 12-volt ones that are about the size of a brick and weigh about that much, just run your fingers on both sides of the battery, on the length of the battery, and if it's perfectly smooth and, you know, parallel on both sides, that's a good sign. If the battery feels like it's bulging, you know, as you run your fingers along the side of the battery, that would be a definite, sign that the battery is probably shot, that the stuff inside is expanded and is bulging, you know, the sides of the battery. So if you feel one that doesn't feel perfectly smooth, you know, and it's bulging out along the side, I would not, buy it unless you can get it for 10 cents.
Okay, Dave. A good tip to look for. I didn't know about that. Appreciate it. WWM. And to WWM, recognize. Curtis. Come down to the next meeting. I'll try to bring an example down what he means on a gel cell battery. Plenty of them over here. When they get old and the elements inside, they get real old, they can actually explode. The plastic has blown apart on the bottom. I'll look around for one that's slightly bulged, one that's completely square. It is a good sign to do. Also, you also may want to bring a voltmeter. Not only that you may need the 12 volts, sometimes you want to see what your amp, make sure it pops. Way of checking that with drive across the terminal and see if you got any spark. You may have the 12 volts in there, but you may not have the amp. One cell may be totally shot. You'll probably be able to work like a scanner for umpteen many hours, that it would be completely dead, but it would never get that complete full charge. Back to you, Ed, and to WWM. Be all right. Frank? Thank you, Ed. Mr. Curtis, you cannot check for amperage that way. You're only looking for continuity to make sure the battery isn't shorted. You have to load test the battery. You've got to put a load on it. That's the only way you can check the amperage capacity. And then again, you can use an amp probe or something hooked up to a device and check the wires going to it to see the current flow. You're talking about continuity there. Anyway, the guy at the Great South Bay, the vendor, I don't know his name, but all these packs were in very good condition, like new. And as a matter of fact, he said they were new. And he had a voltmeter right there. And, he was checking them all before he even gave them to us, you know, which was really nice of him to do. He was just checking them to make sure that they weren't open or shorted in any way, and that they were in working order. So with a couple of ham fests coming up, especially the Weimark one, you know, he could very well be there. So he was at Great South Bay last year, but I know he did very well. So. See what happens. And it's definitely worth $7, no question.
That Sunday, the 21st, at the Freeport Armory is the Weimark Ham Fest. And then coming up, I'll try to get these dates for you. Split Rock Amateur Radio Club in Parsippany. Joe and I went to this one last year. Beginning of March, they're having a Ham Fest. And then you've got the Winter Shortwave Listeners Festival. And I've got the word that the Scanner Forum, the topic is going to be the early history of scanners, how scanners were developed. Probably a good static display of some old scanners on hand.
2XOJ?
Alan.
Ed, just either to correct you or to correct my own mind, but did I hear you say the next meeting is at Perkins on Old Country Road in Farmingdale?
My mistake. That's what I said. Hempstead Turnpike, rather.
Okay, I thought I was losing it. Good to hear it was you for a change. Back to you.
Okay, my mistake there. All right. That's Perkins Restaurant, Hempstead Turnpike in Farmingdale. Hempstead Turnpike. And, okay, March 13th through the 15th, the 12th Annual Winter Shortwave Listeners Festival, held at the Holiday Inn on Sumneytown Pike in Culpeperville, Pennsylvania. For room registration, you got to call the Holiday Inn direct. The number there is 215-368-3800. Special rate for a single or a double of $69. You have to tell the hotel staff you're with the Winter Shortwave Listeners Festival. For up-to-the-minute info, you can listen to the Anarch SWLNet on 7240 Lower Sideband, 10 a.m. Sunday. To register for the festival itself, full registration is $40, which includes lunch and banquet on Saturday. Partial registration, which is just the forums in the hospitality room but no meals, is $17. And a spouse registration, which includes meals, is $22. Send it to the Winter Shortwave Listeners Festival, P.O. Box 591, Colmar, C-O-L-M-A-R, Pennsylvania, 18915. Again, Sundays, you can monitor the Anarch SWLNet on 7240 Lower Sideband at 10 a.m. Also, I'm sure you can find information on Tom Sundstrom's webpage. And I wish I had his webpage address handy. I believe it's www.trsc.com, but I'm not positive. Try to find that before the net is over. So that's the middle of March. Then we got else you may want to mark on your calendar. May 14th, 15th, and 16th, Dayton Hamvention in Dayton, Ohio. For more information, you can, looks like 3-day admission is $16. That doesn't include the banquet. But I'm sure if you look in the back of CQ, VHF, or QST, you'll find an order form. Do they have a phone number listed here? Okay, need a brochure? No, they only list the fax number. Alright, stand by one moment and let's see if we can get you Tom Sundstrom's webpage. Do you want to see like George Zeller's webpage? But it'd be a good one. Stand by. Yeah, I'm looking through the book. Well, if anybody wants it, email me and I'll forward it to you. Jeez, probably going to be the last column to come to. Here we go. Okay, I was right. www.trsc. Thomas Robert Sierra Charlie.com. www.trsc.com. And that's the upcoming schedule. So, let's turn it over to NPWWM for his info. Okay, WWM. Well, I opened up my VX394 tonight, 90. Well, I have it open. Very interesting. A ferrite rod.
What?
Nice big ferrite rod inside. A lot of surface mount technology in there. Very interesting switch they have inside the radio. And a 10K kilohertz inside. But we receive in European kilohertz. I'm unaware that they had a switch in there inside the radio. To take it overseas. But it makes it very hard for the radio. Got a
five screws with that cover. Carefully take it out, which they make it very easily. There's no wires attached to the battery holder or the antenna. With a little clip that sits onto the solder blob on the PC board for the antenna. The clip closes up, everything sits together, including the battery terminal. So they make it fairly easy to open without the wires hanging. Most radios, you have the wires coming off the battery terminal to get to the board. Those of you who never opened up the DX390, the coaxial power plug is up a little bit on the PC board, a little bit of solder blob on there because it came a little loose, close to the solder joint there. Tear that. Very upset time to hear Art Bell last night. Had to keep the coaxial plug tied up to the chandelier. Special way for radio stay on. Of course I turned it. Of course I didn't use the DX394. I turned another radio on. Yeah, and Taco Bell. Anyway. Sounds like George Zeller is here. Anyway. You mentioned about the Long Island frequency, True Bell. Gave them all out there at the top of the net. 155.520 headquarters in Central Islip drop. Parkway 155.460. You also use a few others, most you're aware of. Carter car frequency. Out of here before. 154.665. Frequency 2. They also have a frequency for statewide emergency channel bulletin for special broadcast. Rarely hear it, and very rarely hear it used that much. 154.695. Let's plug in there. And the New York City troop, Bronx, Kings County, Richmond, 476. 6875. And they're up and about. One other one. New York Span. You know, this is the emergency nationwide identification channel. Emergency alert. 155.475. Went the one up to the Tappan Zee Bridge. Going up in that direction. I got a few more. 156. 975 area of the Tappan Zee Bridge. Westchester, Troop K. Got a base and a mobile frequency. Same as the base frequency for Long Island, 155.505. And a mobile frequency of 154.920. That's Troop K, Westchester. Back to net, 2WWM.
N2WWM, KC2AYC. Thanks for that info. And Troop K can be heard down here. You cross the river, you're in True Bell. Should turn back. I don't know if 155.505 is the base to get the mobile. Alright, let me see if KC2BZD is still with us as we approach the end of the second hour.
Want me to give you True Bell, Ed?
Alright, go ahead, Curtis.
This is Newburgh, Milltown, Rockland County area. Base frequency is 155.535, 155.535. Mobile frequency, 154.935. 154.935, the True Path, Rockland County. Back to net,
NQWW on X.
NQWWM, thank you for that info. All right, let's pick up, see if Joe KC2BZB is still with us. Okay, evidently we lost Joe. Just occurred to me. I didn't know if anybody was in the online room. If you were, I'd like to say hello. Again, the best way to reach us is to get on the air. I did send out an email to most of the people through the ScanCom list that there would be no moderator for the chat room available tonight. Originally, Joe and I were supposed to attend the Limark board meeting, and Charlie was going to run the net, but I got a last-minute call and Charlie was unavailable this evening. So, in the future, I'd just like to make this announcement. Should you turn the radio on a Tuesday, and by 10 after 8 or so, there's no net control, feel free, by all means, to just pick up the radio, throw out your call, and, pick it up and have a Q-so about scanning. My interest in the hobby is not waning. I'm more gung-ho about scanning than ever, and I'm more gung-ho about amateur radio than ever. Just that I do want to pursue some other interests, that being attending the Limark board meetings, which happen to be on Tuesday. And I also plan to start attending more of the Aries meetings, which also are on a Tuesday. So we can't get substitute net controls. We may either consider switching the net to Sunday nights, possibly Sunday, whatever, however it goes. If somebody's here, there's somebody here. If not, there isn't. And we'll pick it up the following week. All right, let's stand by and see if we have any additional check-ins.
K2HAB, good evening. AB2KLQ, late check-in.
Okay, I got K2HAB, good evening, Howard. And the next station, I believe it was KB2KLQ. Can you confirm?
Oh, you got it right.
Okay. Do you have any traffic for the net?
Negative. I was just curious what time the net starts.
Okay, we meet here at 8 o'clock and generally run between 8 to 10 or 10:30. Just about every Tuesday.
Roger, thank you.
Thanks for joining us. All right, K2HAB, Howard, do you have any info to pass?
No, no traffic. I just got out of the board meeting and got home. And you didn't miss much. It was boring. I'm going to get out of the car and go into the shack. I'll call you back in a few minutes, K2HAB.
Okay, Howard, thanks for checking in. Any additional stations that would like to check in, please do so now. Okay, if it's another station trying to check in, you're not hitting the repeater, or you've got no audio coming through. All right, at this time again, the next meeting, the third Thursday of the month, I believe is the 18th, the Perkins Restaurant on Hempstead Turnpike, Farmingdale at 7:30 p.m. If you want to email us, you can email me at kc2ayc@qsl.net. You can email Charlie KB2UVB at lima73@aol.com. You can write to us, write to me at ED@PO Box 308, Cedarhurst, New York, 11516. I'll stand by for anyone with any final comments or questions.
KC2BHP, what else, Barry?
KC2BHP, go ahead.
I was just wondering if anybody had the frequencies car-to-car for Suffolk County.
Okay, that would be on the trunk system. Do you have a trunk tracker?
Yes, from the...
Okay, stand by a moment.
Are you online at all?
That's a negative, no.
Okay, there's an excellent website that Keith has. I'll give out the address in a minute for others who might be. Alright, so I'm assuming you've got the system programmed in your trunk tracker, correct?
Yes, I think I have it all programmed in. I'm not 100% sure, but I do have like 20-some frequencies programmed into it there. Go ahead.
Okay, let me give you the two fleet codes. Countywide South, 48016. Countywide North, 48240. And then Special 1, 48048. Special 2, 48080. Special 3, 48112. Special 4, 48114. I'll do that again. Countywide South, 48016. Countywide North, 48240. Special 1, 48048. Special 2, 48080. Special 3, 48112. Special 4, 48114.
Okay, very good. I got that down there. Yeah, I want to try to make the next meeting there. So I was speaking to NTVRA, I think, last week or the week before, and he told me that he'd give me a hand if I bring my units down there to program stuff due to my disability of being visually impaired. So, and I also had a quick question for him on an antenna. If he's back, I know he had a landline. If he's back at this time.
NTVRA, know ya.
GTBHP, the net control, permission to go direct.
Go ahead. Frank's with us.
Okay, Frank, how you doing? This is KCTBHP. The disc cone, the diamond disc cone, do they make one model only as far as scanner antenna, or do they make a couple different outdoor scanner antennas? Go ahead.
Good evening. Well, there's a couple of different ones out there. There's the diamond disc cone, and then of course you have the Radio Shack, and we spoke about the quality factor. And then there's a company that sells an antenna similar to the diamond under the brand name Nevada. And then there's a another company down in South Carolina that sells disc cones. They're the most inexpensive ones. I can't think of the name of that company, Ed. The gentleman is usually at the ham fest that sells these. Mike's antennas, he usually stocks them. But there's not that much difference in the way a disc cone works as compared to the quality of the construction. That's the difference mostly among them. The type of material that's used, you know, that's pretty much it. Are you interested in using the disc cone to listen to the trunk system?
Yes, the phone of that and possible like 900 and so forth, as well as, you know, so, 40s and around there. Go ahead.
Well, I have several outside antennas over here, as Ed knows, and what I'm using for the trunk system is basically a homemade ground plane attached right to the radio, which I think the center element mounted on an SL-230 chassis mount, 238 chassis mount. I think the center is three and a half inches high, the center element, and the radials are out at 3 3/4, which corresponds to a frequency somewhere about 868 megahertz. And this thing here with a right angle adapter sitting on the back of the radio totally outperforms any of the outside antennas as far as the trunk system is concerned, because there's no feed line. So there's no loss. It's hooked right to the radio.
If you have an antenna restriction, it's perfect. That's really all you need if you live in Suffolk County to, well, the most part of Suffolk County anyway, the western part. That's all you need for the trunk system. You don't need anything else. You don't need any outside antennas. You put up a disc cone, it'll work, but I guarantee you're going to have noise because at that frequency, if you run a 50-foot cable length, you're going to have a lot of loss at that frequency, right?
Yeah, okay, very good. Yeah, I just called up Grove today, and because I heard you mention about the disc cone, you know, and I wanted to put an antenna up there. And so she was, the one of the women there that works on a lot of the radios and stuff there, these two women and stuff that are techs there, what have you. And she was trying to steer me away from that antenna and making me go with the scantenna. And I have the scantenna, and I'm not happy with it whatsoever. And she was mentioning to me, well, check my balun, because my balun could be bad and what have you. But I get a lot of intermod on that antenna. Go ahead.
And 2VRA. But you're going to get, any time you hook up a scanner to an outside antenna in a strong signal area, you're going to get intermod. There's nothing you can do about that. Even the triple conversion radios don't cut the pages. The paging interference gets across, through the radio. Although the 895 XLT seems to be an improvement over the older model, which is not trunking, of course, but the 890 XLT, which is double conversion. But outside antennas will give you problems. There's no question about that. Again, as far as the trunking system, the disc cone is a very good antenna, and you'll be pleased with the kind of performance you get with it on UHF and VHF. It's really a performer. It works very well. And it's a unity gain antenna. There's no gain at the antenna, but its capture ratio is very good over a wide range of frequency due to its wideband design. But again, what you can do is use that for an outside antenna for all the other stuff you listen to. And when you're listening to the trunk system, just switch on to something else, indoors. That's all you need. And it should work fine. But you'll have fun with when there's a band opening, the propagation is there, you'll have fun with that disc cone. There's a lot of things you'll hear, especially in the VHF band. I tend to notice that in the VHF high band, the 154 to 160, let's say, during those summer nights when there's sporadic depropagation, tropospheric ducting, the signals come in all over the place. Stay up all night looking to the scanner, listening to Virginia Highway Patrol and all this crazy stuff. So the disc cone's fun. You should, if you can do it, I would invest in one. Check.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I did. I took your word for it last week, but I just wanted, second opinion. It'd be too late by now because, like I said, I ordered that yesterday, and it's on its way with its cable and stuff, just to try an idea. Just to see if it's going to be better than these scantennas I have, because I have two of the scantennas. One's on my dad's radio. I bought him an 895 last year, and it's very noisy. That radio, it's just, well, then again, it ain't programmed properly, my father just uses it just to scan the, the nosy neighbor thing, and that's about all for that unit, and it's a waste, that's all he used that radio for. He's not interested in the trunk part of it or whatsoever, which I am. That's why I use my handheld 235, but, I appreciate the info, and hopefully I'll make, this meeting upcoming there. Go ahead.
Hi, very good. I appreciate your interest in the hobby and good luck with the antenna. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. And also, if you can make your way down to one of the meetings, bring your trunk tracker. We'll check the frequencies to make sure that you have the right index frequencies programmed and the trunking system is set up correctly so that you can get the most out of it. Pretty much it. So you will get noise when you hook this cone up. You're going to get noise like the other one. Keep in mind it's an outside antenna. That's what's going to happen. But this one will be more durable, more than likely, and you'll enjoy it more. Also, you can transmit on it. But I wouldn't. All right, Ed, let me turn back over to you. KC2AYC KC2AYC and 2VRA.
KC2AYC in the net. Okay, gentlemen. Good discussion. Stand by if anyone else has any final comments.
N2XOJ, Ed?
Let's pick up N2XOJ.
Just for your own information, you might want to check Citywide 1. The procession is heading, I guess, out to the airport, and they've had to put a restriction, H, because of the fog. Unusual. N2XOJ back to that.
Okay. Forgot his slickness is supposed to be in town.
Just leaving.
Throw on those federal frequencies, too. Although it's probably encrypted. Sent to notice that you hear everything in the clear, and then an hour or two before it gets here, that's the end of it. Alright, anyone else with any final comments? I just want to point out on any antenna issue, if you're in Suffolk County, like Frank says, he's using an antenna connected directly to the radio. For the trunk system, given the signal loss with coax cables, if you're in Suffolk County, you really should have no problem using some kind of antenna. Not the one that came with the radio, because those antennas that come with the radios, they're like tuned for 150 megahertz. But if you get yourself something dedicated to 800 megahertz or so, 8 or 9, you'll do fine with an indoor setup. Anyone else with any comments on any subject before I close the net?
Yeah, all right.
Right.
Yeah, thank you, Ed. You know, it comes with the base 895, comes with that telescopic. So you can push that all the way down, so it's about 4 or 5 inches or so, and that'll work okay. But not as good as a little homemade ground plane. The ground plane tends to work so much better. Also, it's that kind of connector they have in the back, that plastic thing. I'm real familiar with that. I twist it on, the back of the BNC. That's a terrible connector that Uniden supplies on that whip. That is just a miserable piece of engineering. But that's cost effectiveness, so that's what they're giving you, a big 10-cent antenna. Ed, the only one that can listen in is Monica, because she's got one of those encrypted radios. All right, I'll turn it back to you. I'm out of here. N2VRA, I'll be listening out. Have a good one to everyone.
2VRA KC2AYC. Alright, good net. I'd like to thank everybody who joined us and participated this evening. Again, I'd like to thank Steve WAK for the use of the repeater. And hopefully we'll see you same time, same channel next week. KC2AYC, the net is now closed. The repeater is open to general amateur radio communication. Again, thanks to everybody who checked in or emailed or faxed us or wrote to us. We appreciate it. KC2AYC saying 73.